So it's been a little while since we've talked to you, Jordan, and we're just going to ask you a bit today about maybe some of your memories now that you've been a couple of years removed from the program. We're looking at 2006, if I'm not mistaken. So we've been on the air for quite some time. I started with the show, I think maybe about a year and a half after that. And then have been taking care of your old duty as the guardian of the show for the past couple of years now. So I just thought it would be interesting to ask you to sort of think back a little bit and just sort of reflect on your time when you were here, sort of running the show on your own, and maybe some of the trials and tribulations of getting things started up as far as that. And then maybe if there was any some of your favorite interviews or any funny anecdotes you might be able to tell us about some of the early days.
Yeah, well... I look back very fondly on time with the Green Majority, and I have applied myself to various types of environmental advocacy and education, and that one stands out very fondly for me because there's just such an enormous people component, and Darren, working with you and working with the many other volunteers who were on the show is something I really treasured and continue to think a lot about today when I think back to it. So I loved the radio. I loved the opportunity to educate and express what my reactions and what the audience reactions were to the topics of the day, certainly the volunteers stood out in a big way for me.
I would think one of the things that really drew me to involving myself so much with the show almost immediately after I discovered that you are actually on the University of Toronto campus, perhaps this would be an appropriate point for me to tell just the very brief story of how I got involved. When I was starting university many years ago here at University of Toronto, I was just did a search on iTunes for Canada and environment into iTunes for podcasts because I was listening to many, many podcasts during those days. And the Green Majority was one of the first ones that came up, and I started listening to the show, and that was like, wow, this is really neat, and I really like what they were doing. And one of the things that I specifically liked about it was that it was information-based and very much about hearing different perspectives on stuff. But you... And this is something that I've very much taken to heart, and I've very much incorporated into the core sort of mandate and the entire flavor of what we're trying to do, was the idea that there was no show position on stuff. So, I mean, you would say your personal opinion on things, and we'd get other people's perspectives, but there was always a sense of balance, not in the Fox News balance sort of sense, but in the balance between, you know, you were saying, you know, okay, well, here's my analysis of how I think this stuff works out. Kevin, what do you think? And then, you know, guest, what do you think? And it was very much sort of like it was an honest attempt to have a round table as opposed to, you know, you just having someone on to say things that you wanted to hear and then agreeing with them. And I think that was one of the things that really stood out for me was the actual honest evaluation of what was going on. We very much tried to continue.
I think that is the right way to communicate this information. And I think certainly I and many environmentally oriented thinkers want is really the most rational policy moving forward and not marrying yourself to your preconceptions of what's right can really make the possibility of rational decision-making all that much more possible. And I think that there are certainly many times on that show when my own position changed as a result of what we heard from guests, and I hope that listeners may have had the same experience. But there was a challenge in that respect as we got around to the topic of climate change deniers. We were faced with the issue of providing, and many news outlets are faced with this, providing equal time to so-called the other position. In this kind of reporting, there comes a point where the lazy approach is simply to find two opposing voices and put them on the show together. But eventually, you have a responsibility to weed out cases where there isn't really a legitimate position. That was starting to become clear with respect to climate deniers back at that time. I called and spoke with various deniers in the process of figuring out how to handle this circumstance. And after speaking to scientists about the same thing, I just there was no way I could have a show in which there was really equal time given to these positions, because it was clear that the one position was just to obfuscate and confuse the real issues. So anyway, that's a bit of a diversion, but it's related to the point you made.
Well, I was just thinking while you were talking there, I very recently hosted an environmental conference here at U of T, and one of the things I was saying, it was a conference on environmental activism, and one of the things that I said was, you know, the next time, you know, if you don't feel like getting into hard science with somebody, the next time, if you meet someone on a streetcar, rather than maybe having an opportunity to really engage with someone on the topic, would be if you feel like something flippant to say, we'll say something around the idea of, you know, 98.999% of scientists are on one side and the richest corporations are on the other. What do you think? But the reason I mentioned that was because it wasn't really that clear cut 5 or 10 years ago. I mean, there were still the majority of the evidence and the majority of the experts were still on one side, but it was a lot less clear than it is today that there was pretty much unanimous support for the idea, and that it was at this point beyond question.
Yeah, I think what was less clear at that time was the nature of the opposing viewpoint, that there was an organized campaign by many positions and interested parties to do this kind of obfuscation. And so while the science position was known, it was very tempting to provide equal time to the counterparty, which seemed to have a legitimate argument. You know, we did the sort of brave and underrepresented and unheard have an alternate position that you should hear out. So anyway, that's a mm-hmm. Yes, that is a flashback to that age.
Yeah, well, I think part of the reason it took a little while for the public in general. I mean, I haven't been able to confirm this, but there was somebody at the conference I was mentioning a minute ago was mentioning how something like 70% of the American public now believes that climate change is something that needs to be dealt with. So it's definitely come far since we started dealing with the issue back at the beginning of the show. But I think one of the problems and one of the difficulties that's always been about talking about it is that not only is the science very, very, very complicated, like you can explain the basic concepts, but how it actually all works is incredibly, incredibly complicated. But also so were the deniers' arguments. And while they were fallacious and by people who knew what they were talking about, easily demonstrably so, for the general audience, you know, they both sounded complex. And I think it was when there's sort of two things that your average person really doesn't understand, your tendency is to sort of just automatically assume the one that you prefer is the right one. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. But I don't want to dwell on this one thing too much as we sort of look back. And I thought I would add that another terrific memory I have of the program is simply how many wonderful different aspects there are of environmental thinking and reporting in Canada, and that my job and now your job was really, I think, the best possible job in the world, which is to actually speak and get to talk to all these experts in this area and learn about all of these different dimensions of environmental thinking. And I hope that carried through in the programming and was equally engaging and process of discovery for the audience. Anyhow, I'm sure that you're now having the same delightful experience, and I look back on that fondly.
Mm-hmm. Actually, well, I think the most tangible anecdote I could tell about that since you left would have been our interview with Gordy Warnoff, who's the host of Junk Raiders on Discovery. Mm-hmm. And I called him because he was on the cover of Alternatives Journal, and we were doing been able to continue some of the relationship that we have with that magazine as well. So they throw us guests occasionally and stuff. And so I went to call Gordy to try and arrange an interview, and his answer on the phone was as soon as I said, you know, this is Darren calling from the Green Majority, and about to go into my spiel about we'd like to have you on the show, blah blah blah. He interrupts me and goes, "Oh my God, I love your show!" And I was like, "That's amazing. That's the first time I've ever called to interview someone, and they sounded more excited to talk to me than I was than you know, vice versa." So yeah, absolutely. It's been a real pleasure to be able to have access to so many wonderful people.
Yeah.
And was there perhaps an interview that you really remember that stands out for you, or one of the conferences perhaps that you were able to go and record that really stands out for you?
There's many such moments, some of the most colorful. I recall going. David Suzuki came to the University of Toronto campus, and there was a short press conference after his colloquium talk. And Kevin Farmer and I pulled ourselves together and worked up the courage to go and attend this thing and record some of the press conference. And around that time, there had been a number of commercials from the David Suzuki Foundation in which they had been talking about the power of changing a light bulb and the amount of energy savings we can expect as a consequence of doing this in many different households and so on. And so that was a good and valid point. During the question session, I worked myself up to ask a question and ask David Suzuki whether you know, this is maybe portraying the solution as technological, and that you know, maybe that's the wrong message, and what we need to be communicating is bigger than that. This was clearly received by David Suzuki as kind of an attack, and you don't cross David Suzuki and get away with it. So here we are being emaciated by our environmental idol, and it worked out to quite a good interview, he had some excellent comments to make, but it was certainly colorful and with me very much. After the fact, Kevin and I, of course, had to put together we had good audio from David Suzuki and not ourselves, so we had to reframe all of our own questions and turn it into an interview. But anyway, that was one that I remember fondly. And
I remember that one actually, and I remember thinking, man, he sounds kind of testy.
it was memorable. David Phillips was another colorful character. Jack Layton captured him just as we were walking down through a parade. And I often ask my guests to provide a little catchphrase for the show when the show opened, and the following week we would have them say, "Hi, I'm so-and-so, this is my position, and you're listening to the Green Majority on CIUT 89.5 FM. Now, I asked Jack Layton to say that you're listening to the Green Majority. Now, you know, being a politician and being asked to talk about the majority held by a different party, he was immediately in an awkward position, and so his response was, I can't say that, but what I can say is, well, you're listening to an environmentally conscious program on Canada's community radios." Anyway, that was enjoyable.
Yeah, I remember having going through some of the recordings that you'd made for the beginning of the show. We eventually decided not to do that just because I wasn't finding as much luck remembering to ask people to do it as I think you were. I think perhaps that's why you're working on the memory project, or is far superior to mine. But it was quite entertaining to hear the variety of things that people were saying, and of course the odd time you'd catch. You know, you don't want to be impolite and ask someone who you're lucky to even have a couple of minutes of their time to repeat it because they'd made a mistake. But I remember listening to some of them, and they got the name backwards, or you know, missaid the station, or you know, all sorts of various things, and you just kind of have to smile and nod.
Yeah, it wasn't a 100% hit rate. That's right.
But very entertaining, nonetheless. And I always had a good chuckle listening to them. There's a couple very entertaining ones. I remember one with I don't remember what it was for, but there was a young gentleman and a young lady that was doing it, and they kind of said it in harmony, and it almost sounded like a little bit of a song that done for the intro of the show and everything.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Now, all of this was happening at a time when the environmental movement was enjoying its reawakening, as it were, in the 2000s, the late 2000s, and all the rage was green products and services and ideas, and even as a political initiative, it was, for a brief time, it seems hard to imagine now, but it was the number one voting issue in the mind of the Canadian public. And so, you know, all of that sort of buoyed our efforts and made us feel like we were part of something bigger, I think. And towards the end, you know, things changed, the economy took a hit, and all of that sort of public attention turned to some extent to other matters, and even into some skepticism, which was immediately pounced upon by the forces that opposed this kind of stuff. You know, that just makes it all the more valuable to maintain that that movement and that interest in the education to give that movement the power to restore itself. And so, you know, while you have been having to fight through a tough slog of changing interests, I think that it's all the more essential what the Green Majority is currently doing.
Oh, absolutely. Well, thanks very much for the thumbs up on that one. We certainly been doing our best. It's, you know, rotating set of staff here as volunteers come and go, and we've had a lot of people through our doors. I was actually just trying to estimate the other day how many volunteers I think have come and gone through the Green Majority over the years. I know Kevin is the only existing volunteer that still has regular access to the show. How long? I guess he was there right from the start, wasn't he?
Yep. He was, well, not exactly the very start, but like as close to the start as you could hope to get.
Now, how did you end up meeting Kevin Varmer?
Oh, that's a good question. I think he must have been working with Take Five, and I was introduced to him as a tech for the show who had some interest in environmental issues, and it immediately took him. He was initially a consultant for us, and invaluable asset to the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly enjoy him having on the just so that you know, the old Dr. Doom jokes about Kevin Farmer still stick around to this day occasionally. although I think
that's not what we get out of Kevin Farmer, is his optimism, but nonetheless.
I think I don't, although I'm not entirely sure, and perhaps you might have to tell me what you think, but I'm not sure if either he's lightened up a little bit over the past couple of years, or if I've just moved more towards his position, but the difference between his gloominess and mine is quickly becoming less noticeable.
Okay.
We've probably got just about a minute or two left. I was wondering if there was any other stories you could remember or interviews you were interested in, or if you even wanted to just do a general message to the audience.
A general message to the audience?
Sure, an appeal for whatever, environmentalism, whatever you like.
Keep listening. Tell your friends.
Tell your friends, tell your neighbors.
No, it really is all, like I was saying, you know, this in this age of in which people are attending to other things, it's very easy for, you know, really important stuff to slip by unnoticed. And I think that one of the crucial features of having an environmental news program and paying attention to what's happening in the news is that those things can't slip by undetected, and the political forces that would like to make large changes that are detrimental to the environment and positive for lining private pockets, if they feel that there are eyes on the issues at hand, then they are less likely to be willing to take the political cost of making those negative decisions. And so even before these things happen, simply having a show like this around and having an active cohort of listeners who talked about these issues to their friends is just so important. And so my appeal to listeners is continue to squeeze everything you can out of these discussions and news on the Green Majority, and make it a part of your social life.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And just before we go, Jordan, I want to just say again how thankful I am and we all are for you starting the program. We've been able to, I think, to do a lot with it since you had to leave. But I mean, when I first started coming into I was terrified even at the idea of reading news headlines, much less running the whole show. So everything that we've been able to create is absolutely due to your efforts to get everything going there.
Well, don't overdo it now.
Well, no, it would have never occurred to me that this would have been something I'd been interested in, and now this is something I think is very important and devote a lot of time to. So from all of us here that enjoy listening to the show, thank you.
Well, thank you for having me, Darren.